Hey folks, welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte. I'm a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. So the idea behind the podcast is simple. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, you can check out my website at siftedasweak.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
For the last several weeks, we've been talking with different professionals about eating disorders, and today I want to switch gears a little bit and talk to some folks who have walked this struggle and come out on the other side victorious. A couple of years ago, the Diamond family noticed their son Drake began to show signs of an eating disorder. Drake was away at college and began to lose weight. For a while, his parents let it slide because he assured them it was just the typical school pressures, but soon it became apparent that Drake was in trouble. He'd lost over 50 pounds. Drake and his mom, Patty Jo, are here today to tell their story in the hope that it will help others who are struggling. Patty Jo, Drake, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rita. Drake, you struggled with anorexia for almost 2 years. Now you're walking in freedom. I know eating disorders are complex, but can you help our listeners understand some of what triggered this for you? Was it peer pressure, cultural standards, family stuff? Take us on that journey.
Well, main thing for me was, a lot of it had to do with loneliness. I was a, freshman at Wheaton College, and I was, the plan was for me to be on the basketball team there, and that was sort of going to be my, my social outlet, and big part of my life. And then I decided not to play. So there was sort of a void. Avoid in my life. I'd always been sort of an athlete, and instead of, you know, getting involved in lots of activities, I sort of withdrew, and I just decided that I wanted to, and maybe if I, you know, sort of changed how I looked, then maybe you know, maybe everything around me would change, and I sort of mask the loneliness that I was going through.
Yeah. Did you feel, you know, the typical school pressures, I mean, peer pressure up there to look a certain way, to be a certain way? How did that message get sent to you?
You know, to be honest, the college I was at, you know, placed a high emphasis on physical fitness. I felt like I was surrounded by people who were in, you know, just really good shape, people who, you know, exercised a lot. So, if, you know, I kind of just, I wanted to fit in, so I decided that, you know, I would just kind of follow the crowd and, you know, start to exercise a lot, and I felt like that would be my my outlet to fit in there.
Yeah, and to belong. So you had a belief that if I look a certain way, then others will accept me and I'll fit in, I'll belong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did anybody ever say anything to you about your weight? I mean, you're a big guy. You're 6'8". Were you ever made fun of? Did anybody say you were fat? Was there anything like that that kind of got in your brain that triggered some of this for you?
No, not really. I remember... Yeah, a couple of comments. This was in, I would say it was in March of my my first year, and there was a picture of me from high school of when I was on the tennis team, and I thought it was a good picture. I thought I looked like fine. A couple of guys on my floor were just like, I don't think they meant this in a bad way. They were just like, yeah, you looked like you were a lot bigger then. And so I was just like, I guess I kind of internalized that, and I was like, well, okay, maybe I was a little bit too big. Looking back now, I can see just how stupid that was to actually, take that comment and sort of internalize it. But other than that, nobody really made any comments about my weight. In high school, I always kind of felt like, I consider myself, I was an athletic person. I played sports, so I didn't really care. I was sort of self-conscious about my body, but it wasn't really an issue. So.
How did you deal with all of this? Did you blame yourself at all? I know you've talked openly about your own body image and food issues, struggle. Did you feel that any of that affected Drake's choices?
Initially, that was the first thought that came into my mind. But because I began to do lots of reading, which I hadn't had to do before, about and understanding eating disorders and exercise disorders, I began to be able to separate my life from Drake's choices and my role as his mother. And that was probably the most important thing to do early on. But honestly, yes, I do see, as I look back now, patterning that I did, my own, the way in which I viewed my body, the way in which food was presented in the family, the importance placed on subtly, not overtly, body image through the years. I can see how that played a part, but it was very important that I separated that Drake's choices from my experiences.
Yeah, as moms, we tend to take a lot of that stuff on, blame ourselves. Well, if I hadn't done this, or if I'd have just done this, then maybe this wouldn't happen. We get on that cycle, and that's very self-defeating.
Right. It wasn't really the question that we began to understand needed to be answered. We began to understand that the eating disorder was a coping mechanism, as Drake has just said, to deal with feelings and a lack of a voice that he was using that he hadn't developed. So very early on, I was able to see clearly that the eating disorder was a way in which Drake was choosing to deal with pain and losses and feelings. So that helped a lot to understand that from his perspective.
So Drake, you don't remember like getting triggered by stuff your mom, you knew your mom was real conscious about, exercising, food. Maybe she, made casual remarks. We as parents do that because we have our own issues. You don't remember any of that being a major issue for you? Like, do your mom thinks it's real important to be in shape and exercise and look good?
No, that I don't remember that being an issue.
Okay.
I honestly, especially since I developed eating disorder in college when I was away from home, but.
Yeah. What made you realize that you really had a problem and drop the wall of denial? Because that's a huge first step for folks with eating disorders.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of moments where I thought, okay, something's not right. One key moment was I was in taking a health and wellness class at Wheaton, fall of 2009. And we had to do this like fitness evaluation type thing where they would do your height, your weight, and a couple other things. And this was in October. I think when I first going back to that semester, I was probably between 175 and 180 pounds. my memory serves me correctly, which is still very, you know, very, very thin for someone my height.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I got the results back from the test. I think I weighed like 161 pounds. And my body fat was something, it was like below 3%. So that was kind of a wake up call. So then that's when I decided, okay, I'm gonna go talk to somebody about this. We can go to the student health center.
Were your parents kind of ragging you along the way, or not, you know, concerned, you know, that kind of bringing this, you know, putting it in your face, Drake, you got a problem?
Yeah, I would say, there was definitely some concern, especially over the summer when I was living at home. I was supposed to be trying to gain weight, but I had to, you know, eat a certain amount of calories a day and, you know, keep track of my exercise, things like that.
Do you think you were still fudging a little bit at that point, like fooling yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was just doing my own thing. Didn't really have any concern for sort of the effect it was having on, you know, on my body and on, you know, on my family. I was just entrenched in my behaviors.
Mm-hmm. And the drive then was what? Still, you know, this acceptance, I've got to be, I mean, or do you really feel like this eating disorder voice just kind of took over at that point and you weren't even thinking clearly?
I would say it's a little bit of both. I would say I was just, it was just habit. It was just, you know, this routine. Just follow an exercise routine and, you know, eat healthy. But there was definitely, you know, there were definitely some days where I, you know, just didn't feel like exercising, or, you know, didn't, you know, just wanted to eat, you know, normal foods, I guess.
Well, were you exhausted? I mean, did you feel physically ill at all? What did you notice physically?
I noticed that, I was definitely getting, over the summer, I never really felt physically exhausted or anything like that. That started to kick in once I went back to Wheaton and started to lose more weight. I really noticed that my strength wasn't there.
And what did you say to yourself? Like, did you just convince yourself that, oh, it's no big deal? Did you minimize all that?
I didn't, I was so, so blind at the time. I didn't really think it was a big deal.
Were your friends saying stuff to you? Like, dude, you don't look good. You're too thin.
Yeah, there were, lots of comments,
And how did you deal with that? Did you just think, you still didn't see yourself as that skinny?
Yeah, that's exactly how it was. I thought, you know, I thought I looked fine. Probably the best part of my day was going to the weight room and just, you know, admiring how I looked.
Mm.
I feel like a lot of people just avoided me because of my condition. I also avoided them, but...
You think they didn't want to say anything to you, or what was it?
Yeah, they just didn't want to say anything.
They didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to do.
And they didn't know what to say. And, you know, my brother, actually, my older brother, he was actually at Wheaton at the time. And, you know, he was constantly telling me, you know, you need to, you know, you're too skinny. You need to, you know, you need to change, you know, stop working out. Things like that,
mm-hmm.
but like I said, I just wouldn't listen. So
you still weren't getting it.
Yeah, still didn't get it.
Patty Jo, how did you help Drake to silence this eating disorder voice when he was home? And when, you know, once he admitted he was had a problem and all this was, you know, coming down, what was your role? What was the family's role to help him with that?
I think the first thing that we began to understand, the best thing that we learned, was to separate the eating disorder voice and the eating disorder's agenda from Drake and from himself and who he is and who we knew him to be.
Mm.
And in doing that, that became the foundation and the framework from which all conversations and interactions with Drake happened for my husband and myself. Without that, I think we would have been spinning wheels in our communication. Specifically, what that looked like were statements such as this: "That's the eating disorder talking, Drake. We're not willing to talk to an eating disorder." We set specific boundaries. We would help him to understand how the lies and deception in eating disorders, such as the following, lives in. It's never satisfied. It's like a temper tantrum. So it always wants to negotiate. So there were many times Drake would begin to develop a pattern with us of trying to negotiate, and we would immediately set a boundary. Drake, we're not going to talk to the eating disorder when you're willing to talk to us. And we learned some of this through two ways. One, through reading, counseling, actually three ways, and the third being the particular treatment center that Drake did eventually go to. That was the modus de operandus. They really helped us to understand that. There were times where when Drake was in treatment, we had to hang up on the phone with them. That was difficult.
Yeah.
And wait for him to call back when he was ready to talk. But I can't say that strongly enough how much it helped me to understand the basic lies of the eating disorder. It wants to negotiate. It's never satisfied. It's condemning. It can only tell lies. That was really a great foundation for us to be able to establish new communication with Drake and help him separate himself and his thoughts, his feelings, and also Rita to begin to develop his own voice, which was really what I think contributed somewhat to the initial problem. Drake not feeling that he had his own voice within the family, giving him permission to have that and to speak that.
Mm. If you're just tuning in today, folks, we're talking to Patty Jo and Drake Diamond about Drake's struggle with anorexia. Patty Jo, you just said something that was really important, I think, for carers, and the modulary approach, you know, really stresses this. Calm, compassionate, and consistent. So what I'm hearing you say is when you address Drake, one of the biggest things you did was try to remain calm. Now, that's great, but when you've got somebody home that's struggling with this, it's a whole systems problem. The whole family's involved in this. I'm sure there were times when Drake was very emotional or you guys got frustrated and blew your stack. How did you handle that? I mean, I'm sure there were times when that occurred. Can you take us through that a little bit?
Those are painful moments to revisit. But yes, I will. I will talk about that. First of all, my nature is not calm. I would say I'm not consistently compassionate. So without my faith and the strength of God's grace in my life, the times at which we hit rock bottom, those actions, those three C's, could not have happened in my own strength, because the eating disorder wants to destroy relationships. And so separating Drake from the eating disorder was step one, and recognizing that wasn't my son. So that helped the most, was when he would hide food, lie to us, go exercise when he told us he wasn't going to, make up stories. That separation of the action Drake was doing, being in his eating disorder, and my son Drake, was step one. That helped both Greg and I to remain calm, consistent, and compassionate. The second thing would be believing very, very strongly that there was nothing we could say or do that was going to speed the process up of healing that Drake needed to go through, or a magic wand we could wave to make it go away. So it really became a day-to-day living in the moment. What's the next right thing to do, or say, or be, in our relationship with Drake? I look back now, I think on a specific time, we pick him up from 6 weeks in the eating disorder clinic, and the first thing he says in the car is, "I got nothing out of this, I just want you and Dad to know that."
Like, wow.
A dagger to our heart. But at the time, we stayed calm, compassionate, and consistent, because we knew the eating disorder was trying to take over. And so that was crucial, to not personalize rejection. And there were times when I took it very personally, but when I was able to not only just separate Drake from the eating disorder, but the eating disorder from Mom. That it wasn't Drake speaking to his mom. Drake wasn't trying to hurt Mom and Dad. It was the eating disorder.
Yeah, or that you were responsible to fix Drake. I mean, because as a parent, you know, you want to jump in there. I mean, you're watching your son, you know, you're talking, you know, in real trouble. And so that had to be extremely difficult.
And I think every parent's knee-jerk reaction is to personalize. What did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How did we get here? So being able to detach from the personalization and be more objective, and I happen to have a husband who is very good at that, and so he guided us through a lot of that. Although we were both deeply wounded and hurt, particularly I think my husband, his temperament is much like Drake's, and they have a very close relationship. But the depersonalization gave us the ability to be more compassionate. It wasn't an attack on us. And so it changed the battle lines. It changed what the goal was, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What do you think God taught you in the midst of all this? I mean, what's one thing that you really walked away with?
One thing I walked away with.
I mean, you talked a little bit before, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about the control piece.
I think, you know, understanding that the eating disorder's engines are control and acceptance and suppressing feelings, control being the main driver. I lived a very painful childhood, and I think that much of my parenting was geared around ensuring pain-free living for my children. And I had plans. And I wanted to believe A plus B equals C. And Drake was a child who was bringing in the results. He was bringing them home. He was hitting home runs by the world standards. And this has now, as I was now in what I call freedom as a parent, relinquishing the control and the outcome of my children's lives to my Heavenly Father, and that I'm not the one writing the script. I'm contributing, but I don't have a script. And so the idea of having control, believing that if I do a certain thing a certain way, this will be the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it interesting that that so lines up with the way an eating disorder, the voice of an eating disorder thinks? It says, if you eat this, restrict this, weigh this, I will get this. It's if-then thinking.
Yeah.
I don't live in if-then anymore.
Wow, that's powerful.
We're out of time for today, folks, but be sure and join us next week as we continue our discussion with mother and son, Patty Joe and Drake Diamond, on overcoming anorexia. If you or someone you know is struggling with an eating disorder, please contact a professional therapist for help. You can also go to the National Eating Disorder website, NEDA, or log on to my website and ask Rita for recommendations for other helpful tools.
I had a big hole in my heart, and I was looking. I was looking everywhere.
That's a wrap for our show today. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.